Welcome to a podcast of Beyond the Book, a presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center. Copyright Clearance Center is the world's largest provider of copyright compliance solutions through a wide range of innovative licensing services and comprehensive educational programs for authors, publishers, and their audiences in academia, business, and research institutions. For more information about Beyond the Book and Copyright Clearance Center, please go to www.beyondthebook.com.
We're in Cambridge, home of the internet and the very first email transmitted in 1971 at Bolt, Baranek & Newman. Welcome to Beyond the Book. Chris Keneally, your host here at the offices of Forrester Research, with a conversation I'm looking forward to myself, and that's a look at social media and how authors and publishers can leverage the power of some of these tools to make the world more aware of their work and possibly advance their own professional causes. Joining me is Vice President for Idea Development at Forrester Research, Josh Bernoff. Josh, welcome to Beyond the Book.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be able to be part of this.
Well, it's great to have you. And you're the author, co-author of a book that came out in 2008 with Charlene Lee, your former colleague here at Forrester, called Groundswell, Winning in a World Transformed by Social Technologies. And, you know, social media is today a catchphrase for quite a lot of things, but reasonably well understood by people because certainly the phenomenon of Twitter has become, you know, household word, if you will. Some of it to do with just the way that people began using it in their own lives, but certainly because of what went on in Iran in the past few weeks has brought everybody really up to speed on all this. But you were writing about social technologies and social media some years ago, and you had spotted some interesting trends. And I wonder if we can first ask you what your reaction is to the Twitter phenomenon today. Were you expecting it to explode the way that it did?
Well, I guess to provide some context here, when we talk about the groundswell, we're really pulling together all of the social technologies so that people can see that this is all part of a single trend. The groundswell is a social trend in which people get the things they need from each other rather than from corporations, and they use these social technologies to do that. So when you look at things that way, then Facebook and YouTube and blogs and Twitter are really all part of that same trend. And Twitter's an interesting case. We have a test in Chapter 2 of Groundswell where we say, you know, these new technologies are going to come up. You don't know what they are. But here's a test to determine which ones are most likely to succeed. And we use Twitter as the test case, which at the time we wrote the book through the 2007, it certainly wasn't clear what was going to happen with Twitter. But based on that test, we said it looks like this thing is set to be very successful, and it probably is something you'd be interested in. And sure enough, now 2 years later, it has certainly taken off.
Well, what were the questions you asked in that test, and how did you determine, yes, this was something that was going to take off?
Well, the first thing that you need to look at is how easy is it for people to get started with this. And certainly with Twitter, it's extremely easy to sign up and use. The second is, does it have something for both the people who are creating content, a group that we call the creators in the Groundswell book, as well as the people who are just observing it, what we call spectators in the book. And certainly Twitter is capable of being successful for both of those groups of people. The third thing is, for people who participate in it, do they get value out of the relationships that are created? Can they say, after using this, you know, this has been a new way for me to connect with people that's useful to me? And I think if you look at the way people use Twitter, from people keeping up with their friends to somebody like me, you know, reaching out to thousands of people who want to follow the things that I write about, to Ashton Kutcher with a million followers, or people in Iran who are trying to get the message out, it certainly is valuable to the people participating in it, and it does form new relationships.
Well, we're talking to an audience here of authors and publishers, and traditionally they've been kind of the laggards in the technology adoption space. At least that's the reputation they have. And many authors, you know, I used to have a friend who thought that his word processor was a number two pencil. So he was very reluctant to get into technologies, and that's partly because of the craft and partly because of the personality that gets attracted to so much of this work. So when they look at social media, they need to evaluate. You just gave us some very simple ways of doing it. But you're a writer too. And you briefly alluded to how you're using Twitter or blogs and so forth. Go into that just a bit. How often are you Twittering during the day? I mean, I started a Twittering account with Beyond the Book, and I can get to it once, maybe twice a day. I feel like I'm not doing enough. But am I doing enough? Should I feel like I should be tweeting more? What's a sufficient volume to really matter?
Well, I think, as we say in the book, you want to concentrate not on the tools, but on your objectives, and then figure out which tools are best. Twitter may not be right for everybody. I mean, let me talk about what we did with Groundswell to promote the book, which I think is certainly something that every author can get to. First of all, every author and book needs to have its own website, even if it's just a place for people to find out about you. In the case of Groundswell, one of the important things we did in launching the book was to reach out to bloggers that we knew or had formed relationships with and ask them to review it and then follow up with that. That was very successful in helping the book to get off the ground. By the way, here's a little hint that people don't think about. If somebody writes a review of your book on their blog and it's good, tell them to go to Amazon and put that same stuff in at Amazon, because that's where people look. We also, Charlene and me, and now it's just me at Forrester, continue to publish updates on the Groundswell blog, which is at groundswell.forrester.com. And the Twitter is really an extension of that. It's my way not only of reacting to people who might be interested in contacting me, but also taking people and telling them when new stuff is appearing on the blog and other stuff that we want to promote. So this means I have a relationship with our readers that goes well beyond the fact that they bought the book. And I also can listen in and see what they're saying. That's one of the best things about Twitter, is to do a search on your name or the name of the book and see what people are saying. And you really get a feel for what's going on and who might be influential that you want to contact that's talking about your book.
Well, you know, listening is actually a chapter, I think, in the book about listening to the groundswell. And there are also strategies for tapping the groundswell and talking to it. But you made a point recently that was, I think, really insightful, and that regards marketing. Marketers, whether they're publishers or whether they're Coca-Cola, are accustomed to talking to people, but they're not so very accustomed to listening, and they certainly don't know about the two-way dialogue. Talk about that.
Well, it's interesting that marketers, whether we're talking about book marketers or any other kind, are good at getting messages out, but it's mostly shouting, you know, hey, we've got a new laundry detergent. Hey, I have a new book out. And if you treat these social channels the same way, you can certainly use blogs or YouTube or whatever to get your message out. The challenge is to listen at the same time, because you may find that people are reacting to what you're saying. You may be able to develop deeper relationships. You may find out that somebody important or with a big following is interested in what you're doing, but you won't find that out unless you listen and have more of a conversational element. I will just let you know that authors in general have become better and better at this. Publishers in general stink at this.
Spoken like a real author.
Well, it's it's just that, I mean, if you look at our publisher, Harvard Business Press, they actually have a very active site that includes blogs on it. They've done a reasonably good job. But in the end, your responsibility as an author is to do this mostly yourself. And I'll never forget when we were out pitching Groundswell, one publisher said to us, oh, yeah, well, we're really adept at using social technologies to promote books. And so we said, oh, well, we're actually the experts on this. What do you actually do? And in listening to their answer, what they basically said was, one of our authors started a blog and we cheered them from the sidelines. And I thought, well, that's typical of a publisher. You know, that's this isn't really a skill they've got. It's a skill that the author had that they're learning from.
And your point there, I guess, is really an admonition to any author to be prepared, probably before they walk into the publisher's office, with their own tools and a strategy for how they're going to market themselves.
Yeah, you're going to be the one lining up the speeches. You're going to be the one who's got the blog. And I'll also tell you that during the process of creating and pitching the book, you want to be engaged in this activity already. First of all, it's very valuable for research purposes, not so much for fiction, but for nonfiction. You can find cases and people through a blog. You want to develop that following. You can't start the minute the book is published and say, oh, here I am. It's like, no, it takes a while to build this stuff up. And you'll also be more valuable to the publisher if you have a plan like that in place. They look at that in your proposal and they say, oh, these guys really know how to promote, and therefore this book will be worth more.
So that's what you mean by tapping the groundswell. You've really got to be very proactive. You can't. The groundswell does not come to you.
Most likely it isn't. And if it's there and you're not listening, you won't even notice. I mean, we went out to people like David Berkowitz, who writes a book called a blog called Inside the Marketer Studio, to David Armano, people like that who we persuaded to have a look at the book, to write about the book. They were the prominent people in our space, so you got to find out who are the prominent people in your space and reach out to them, form those relationships. And then later, when they want you to promote their book, that's a valuable connection to have made also.
Well, and again, it is something I'm hearing over and over, that from the marketing for books, the publishers really do expect the authors to take on the responsibility. There's an interesting kind of bonus to this, I guess, in that while your book was published in May of 2008, we're still talking about it. I'm sure you're still talking about it in some respects, right? I mean, you've got other work to do. You've got your own research here. You've got other projects. But there's a way to extend the life of a book far beyond its time in the particular publisher's catalog.
Well, Groundswell, fortunately for us, for something that's so trend-oriented, continues to sell well. And that's because there are, you know, for every company that's been successful with social technologies in marketing, there are 20 other companies that are just getting started on it. So we're continuing to hear from people about the book. And last I checked, it's still between 500 and 1,000 on the Amazon list, which is a pretty good place for a book that's been out for about 14 months. It's not the long tail, but it's still pretty good. So, you know, this is part of the deal, is that when you're writing a trend book, to try and set it up in such a way that it continues to have relevance in a long-term way. And the blog and the Twitter and all of that really helps to extend that value by giving people something to connect with even after they've read it.
Right. So again, just to reemphasize for people who are sort of trying to follow along and take notes about all of this, the platform, does it need to be a website? Can it be a blog? Can it be an account with something like this new Filed By? Yeah. What is an absolute ground floor requirement?
Well, you need a space that's your space online. But most of the blog platforms now basically allow you to create pages which would be the equivalent of a website. So if you can't afford or aren't comfortable with creating your own website, then just set up a blog and that becomes your site and a way to connect with people. I think any author that doesn't have a blog doesn't exist. You're basically, why would anybody listen to you about anything that you want to talk about if you're not continually updating the kind of insights that you've got? You know, to extend out from that with Twitter is a good idea, Facebook page is a good idea. If you're in other countries, places like Zing may be a better place for you to set up.
I'm not sure I know what Zing is.
Zing is basically similar to LinkedIn, but more popular in Europe. But you need a place for people to connect with you. And if you haven't provided that, then you basically send the book out there and you say, here it is. Hope you enjoy it. Bye-bye. And that's a lot less powerful.
How do you feel about video, podcasting, YouTube, those kinds of sites where, you know, it's more than just the printed word? Again, we're talking about authors who are comfortable tapping away at a keyboard, but may not be so comfortable with, you know, a conversation like we're having or a video, for example.
Well, there are authors who communicate that way. Shel Holtz is a local author here in Boston. He's also got a base out in San Francisco who does a regular podcast. That's how he likes to keep in touch with people. And as far as video goes, a little bit can go a long way. You got to make it sort of interesting. We did some videos in conjunction with the Harvard Business Press that were pretty nice, had nice production values. But one of the values of video is that not only can you put it on your own blog easily, but by uploading it to YouTube, other people can put it there. So you find your talking head now is in some other place where people are saying, hey, you should see what Josh Burnup has to say about this. Here's the video. It's a way to have your promotion spread out beyond your own little space.
Right. I mean, they can blog about your blog, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. And they can cite your videos. One of the points we make in Groundswell is that different types of consumers have different behaviors online. So some people will listen to podcasts, some won't. Some people will watch a video, some aren't as interested in that. Some people like text, some people like Twitter. And you really need to think a little bit about the generation of people you're trying to reach and what they'd be most comfortable with. By the way, if people go to groundswell.forrester.com, we have a little tool there on that site that lets you look at people in different countries by age and gender and actually see their level of participation, which can be helpful to people.
That's very insightful, because I was thinking when you were mentioning Zing that one has to remember that the Internet is by definition a global medium, and so you can't just be aware of what's happening in Cambridge or in Silicon Valley. You really need to know what's happening in South Africa and Australia and wherever.
Yeah. Well, we tried to put as many international examples into Groundswell as we could, and I recently met up with Web 2.0 type people in Spain, in Italy. I'm going in September to Japan and Korea, and these are places where there's just as much interest, and the local publishers, I think, are quite interested in your coming by and participating that way.
Well, in fact, I was just about to ask, as a way to wrap us up, we've been talking with Josh Burnup at Forrester Research about social media, his book co-authored with Charlene Lee, Groundswell. And, your research is a kind of prognostication. You get the chance to do something we all wish we could do, and that is see into the future. Are you able to talk about anything that's just around the corner here? You fellas saw social computing, social media, years before the rest of us did. What's coming in the next 12 to 18 months? And has the fall in Internet advertising had an impact at all as far as development of new applications or adoption of them?
Well, we are as busy as we can possibly be here working with companies around social technology. So the fall in Internet advertising has not put a dent at all in people's desire to use social, which is less expensive and more powerful than a lot of the other ways that you can do marketing. As far as looking into the future, we actually just published a report called The Future of the Social Web that looks at that question exactly. And what I think you're going to see in the future is that your identity and your friend relationships, which are right now locked up in sites like Facebook, will start to become part of every online experience. So, when you go to a website now and you see a button that says send us an email and you click on it and it pops up your email, nobody thinks that's shocking. It's like, oh, that's just built into the fabric of the Internet. You can email from any site. Well, imagine if at any site it would recognize your identity and it would allow you to see what your friends thought of that site. That's the world of the future, and we've got a perspective on how over the next 5 years we will go from information locked up in sites like Facebook to basically having it woven right into the fabric of the Internet.
Wow, that's interesting. And you had already mentioned that an author who doesn't have an online presence essentially doesn't have an identity. So if this is what's coming and you want to meet that train at the station, you really need to be creating that identity now and making sure that you are prepared. And it's the identity that you want to have.
Yeah, if you look at your sources of identity, you've got your blog, you have a potential to have a Twitter identity, and you have a page in Facebook or LinkedIn. And certainly if you don't have any of those things, you should get one. But you also should be thinking of those identities as ways to make connections and promote yourself and find out who can help you out. These are things you got to line up both while you're working on the book and then after it's been published. And you'll be more valuable to publishers and you'll sell more if you do that.
Well, some very helpful insights from Josh Brenoff, Vice President of Forrester Research. It's been great to chat with you here in Cambridge. Josh, thanks for joining us at Beyond the Book.
Thank you.
All right. And this is Chris Keneally, the host of Beyond the Book, wishing you well and hoping you'll be back soon. Thank you.
Beyond the Book is an educational presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center, with conferences and seminars featuring leading authors and editors, publishing analysts, and information technology specialists. Beyond the Book is the premier source for knowledge on the latest business issues facing today's dynamic publishing industry, from initial research to final publication and beyond.